Hello, sexy nerds of Nerd Imperium. Welcome to this week's episode of the Currently Nerdy Podcast. We are your inner conclave of nerdom. My name is Diz, and I'm your pop culture and sports nerd, Mr. Ali.
I'm Ali, your classic nerd.
And I'm BM, your comic book nerd.
Guys, you know how I have that masterpiece on your fridge, Ali?
Yes, yes.
So,
this is your stick figure drawing?
This is a drawing that Diz made when he was drunk that I show to all my guests when they come over.
Yes. I have a new drawing that Diz made when he was drunk, except this one was 95 times more artistically talented than that one. I used acrylic paint. I drew a sunset on a beach. It's a beautiful landscape. And then I got really drunk and I winged it and I realized my painting was going to suck. So I drew a shark in a little scuba diver stick figure, man. And in true Diz fashion, I fucked up the date again.
What did you write?
I wrote 8/10/2017. And then someone's like, hey, jackass, it's September. So I went over it with the bigger pen or a bigger brush, and I turned it into a 9. But that painting got me in a little bit of trouble, though, because we went to the bar after we painted, and I had it next to me, thinking it was going to be a conversational piece. Mm. But what had happened was it sparked the wrong conversation. I had a gentleman come by, and I was sitting there talking to my coworkers, and he's like, hey, let me smoke your vape. And I said, yeah, sure, why not, right? Not even thinking about it. And then he puts his arm around me, and he's like, hey, let me buy you a drink. And I'm like, oh, no, thank you, sir, I'm fine. And he's like, please, let me buy you a drink. And I'm like, no, I'm good, man, thank you. And then, like, he was, like, trying to grab me and pull me to the bar. I'm like, dude, I'm fine, like, relax, like, we're talking here. Like, I don't want to drink, I'm good.
How old was this guy?
This guy was, like, in his mid-30s. Right. And he wasn't taking no for an answer from me for some
reason. He's not an old guy. You made it seem like he was an old guy.
I didn't say he was an
old guy. Yeah, when you talked about it earlier, I assumed that it was like some like crusty old creep guy.
No, he was a 35-year-old creep. Right? Mid to late 30s. Okay. He could have been 40. I don't know. Right. You know? But then like I go to use the restroom because I had been, you know, been drinking. And when you drink, you have to pee. This guy follows me into the restroom.
And was he drunk also?
Yeah, he was drunk also. And I'm like, dude, kick the fuck back, man. Like, I don't want your drink. Like, leave me alone, please. And he's like, no, let me buy your painting. I'm like, no, you can't buy my painting. Leave me alone. And, yeah, I got to the point where my coworkers had to be like, hey, man, like, you need to chill out, all right? Like, stop hitting on our coworker. It was pretty bad. I've never been, like, chased down like that.
But he wanted to buy your painting?
Afterwards.
Now you feel like what most women feel like.
Seriously. I know. That's terrible. I never do that to women.
I always feel bad because, like, I'll be hanging out with friends or something, and then, you know, I would look at their Tinder profiles, like, the messages they get on Tinder when they match with people. Some of it's really fucked up.
It is. It's some sketchy shit.
Yeah.
But, no, I don't...
You've never aggressively pursued anyone?
No, I've never chased a woman to the bathroom. I've never been like, let me buy you a drink. If I offer a girl a drink and she says no, I'm like, okay, cool. That's it. Walk away. What's why am I going to keep trying to pursue somebody that's not interested? Nothing's going to change. She's still just going to be not interested and be more annoyed, which is what happened with this guy.
Plus, you won't have as much money because you bought a drink.
Exactly. And this time, I felt like that. I was just...
I think bar in general and drunkenness always produces some type of aggressive situation. Mm-hmm. But I think the anonymity... And it's not that anonymous.
Yeah, because I can see your face.
But, yeah, I mean, you could put in fake profile. You could
on Tinder?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, no, I meant
anonymity of the internet or the anonymity of that screen makes people more aggressive. There's whole like Twitter pages and Instagram profiles that are just dedicated
to just
screenshotting Tinder conversations.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I never want to be on those.
And there, yeah, you may end up someday.
Hello, pretty lady.
Yeah, you do the same thing there.
Hello, pretty lady.
Well, there was the I just read was Burkers and Beer, right? Like I subscribed to the blog.
Yeah, Medina's.
And she actually put up shout like, out messages, to Medina, right? Of people who were really upset at her.
Well, in the case of Burkers and Beer, the author has been like stalked now.
Yeah.
Online. And she's very public about it. She's posted it up on Instagram.
Yeah.
She's put it up on Facebook. In order to kind of name and shame, in order to make this person stop. But it hasn't made this person stop. It made this person open up even more profiles.
Oh, yeah.
He's got like 50 profiles.
That's true. Didn't he harass you, Diz?
Yeah. But so one of the guys harassed me. Like, he made 6 profiles afterwards. But the way I learned to make him stop harassing me was to say, hey, I feel sorry that your mom didn't get that abortion that she actually wanted.
That's really fucked up. But he's probably...
He blocked me.
Yeah, so like, yeah, women in particular, and I think women that are public even more so. So if you're a public figure, like Medina is with Burkers and Beer, and on her Instagram, she's a blogger. I think those women in particular, especially women of color, get a type of hate.
Yeah.
There was a very famous political scientist and sociologist the other day on Twitter that said her day is basically made up of hate mail, hate tweets, hate messages, and coffee.
Do you think... I'm going to ask you this. Do you think the reverse happens to, like, Republican women that are out? Like, do you think, like, Tommy Lauren gets a ton of it?
I don't... I think the Republican women or conservative women do get a lot of blowback. Less to do with them being women and more to do with some of the stuff they say, the stances that they have. But yeah, I think there is a gendered component there as well. I think conservative, like, people are more comfortable targeting conservative women
than they are
conservative men.
Yeah, because like I like Hassan Piker. I like his videos, right? They're funny. But I don't see a lot of him going after, like, a Rush Limbaugh.
Or Bill O'Reilly.
He has.
John Hannity, yeah.
Don't get me wrong. He has done it in the past. But who does he target mostly?
Right. Well, I mean, if you think about Tommy Lauren, she's not a particularly intelligent, smart...
She really doesn't hold much power.
She doesn't have much power. And yet, there's a lot of fixation with her.
Mm-hmm.
And I can get it because she went viral. And she's kind of like the millennial version. But, like... compared to a Sean Hannity, who holds a lot of cultural sway with conservatives, I would think you'd want to dismantle his arguments, but people fixate on her.
Yeah.
So, and that there's a gendered component there. And the same thing with, like, Hillary Clinton, right?
Yeah.
Hillary Clinton released her book, right? Mm-hmm. And in the first hour, there was already, like, 200 negative one-star reviews on Amazon. Right, like as if that's not a conservative. Like, please, you didn't all read the book in 2 hours.
Most of these people don't even read.
Yeah, but and then, like, I see it on Facebook all the time too. It's like it's like, oh God, why can't she just go away and all that? Let me be clear. I am not Hillary Clinton's number one fan.
No.
I've been probably
no one on this podcast.
Yeah, I'm pretty harshly critical of her. She is an entitled. She is privileged. She thinks she's deserving. I mean, some of the. Little previews of her book, right? Segments of her book are insane. Like, she talks about this time when, like, a mom brings her daughter up to her and goes, "My daughter didn't vote." And the daughter, like, hangs her head in shame. And she's like, "These people are looking for absolution, but I just want to shake them. Why couldn't you vote? This was so important." Right? There's this deep sense of entitlement there. Like, she should have won. And everything that went wrong was everyone else's fault, not hers.
She blamed Bernie Sanders.
She said some things about Bernie Sanders. On the other hand, she's no different than any other politician. Also, I don't remember Obama ever taking blame or was accountable for the loss. Obama helped lose a lot of Democratic seats.
It's true.
He never once went, let's rethink our strategy.
Yeah.
Obama's back into the spotlight. No one's going, oh God, why is Obama back? You're no longer president.
Yeah, like, you don't see people complaining that he went to help her.
Or the same people that are complaining about Hillary Clinton are also waiting on bated breath going, is Mitt Romney going to run for Senate? It's like there's a gendered hypocrisy there.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think public women in particular
get a
lot more, but I think you see it even at the microcosm of just Tinder interactions.
It's true.
It's
plus
bad.
You know, Ted Cruz is liking porn tweets on Twitter now.
Oh yeah, that
I seen it. It was a threesome video.
Was it really?
I didn't see the video, but I saw that he was trending.
Yeah.
I tweeted out from currently.
Yeah, I saw that. He must have said something stupid again.
He must have. It was that one, and then the other one's like, "The devil made me do it." And it's the devil from what is that Jack Black movie?
Tenacious D.
Tenacious D.
And The Pick of Destiny.
The Pick of Destiny. It's that devil. And it's sticking out. It's
Dave Grohl.
Dave Grohl.
Yeah. So it's to me, though, like, I loved that Twitter just went crazy over that. Like, usually when he trends, it's because he's done something horribly racist.
Yeah.
What made it particularly great, though, is that he is a crusader against hardcore porn.
Yeah.
He tried to ban dildos. He legally tried to, like, eliminate dildos from Texas and stuff. Like, he's a...
So, then he can't be... He can't.
I love that it was him that liked...
A porn. But
I was actually quite surprised. I didn't know that there was porn on Twitter. I was under the impression that
Twitter
and Instagram have regulations against nudity and whatnot.
Instagram does. Twitter is like the wild, wild west.
Oh, I didn't know
anything. Yeah, I didn't know. I mean,
if, so I was surprised. I was just like, oh, wow.
If it's like it becomes too big, they'll delete it. But like you could post like.
I mean, you could post it, but then eventually, if they find it, they're just going to delete it. Oh, okay. Yeah. So right. But like, on Twitter, it's like you can put whatever the hell you want. No one's going to say anything.
Yeah. Instagram's a little bit more.
I didn't know that. So that was surprising.
So is Facebook. For me. Facebook's very like
very strict about that. Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I saw the other day? It actually reminded me of you.
Yeah.
Was that I was watching the Street Fighter movie.
Dude, Sagat.
No, not Sagat.
Why? They look the same.
They're both up. They're both bald
and brown. I could see you with an eye patch and a scar on your chest and doing some Muay Thai.
Anyway, no one on this podcast has abs, Diz, okay? No.
That's true.
Yeah.
I've shaved them into my chest before.
Raul Julia, you talked about Tenacious D, so I kind of thought about this. Raul Julia did a wonderful job as Bison in that movie, an otherwise horrible movie, right? Uh-huh. And the thing is, though, like it was his last role, so I kind of put it on another level for myself. And I realized that he is a sleeper hit when it comes to...
The movie was shit, by the way.
The movie was horrible. It got Jean-Claude Van Damme in it, right?
Playing Guile.
Yeah. But but Raul Julia's performance is an absolute masterpiece. And I realized this because all the lines that he said in that movie are lines that Ali would say.
Like what?
Okay. I have actually an example right here. Okay. Tell me this is not Ali. All right. Okay. Tweet me and tell me this isn't Ali. Okay. The first one. Chun-Li is telling Bison... how he slaughtered her village. And he says he doesn't remember, right?
Uh-huh.
And she's all appalled by the fact he doesn't remember.
Yeah.
And he goes, "For you, the day Bison graced your village was the most important day of your life. But for me, it was a Tuesday."
Ali would say that.
Yeah, right.
Ali would say that after slaughtering a bunch of children in a village.
And then there's another one. "On the contrary, every Bison dollar will be worth 5 British pounds. That is the exchange rate that the Bank of England will implement after I kidnap their queen."
Ali would say that.
I would give you the first one.
Yeah.
That's a legit.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm pretty sure I've said.
Yeah.
Not in a genocidal mass murder context. But I'm sure that I have said something about me deigning to be present at some. It was like a Tuesday for me, right? Yeah. I remember. I recall something like that. Bank of England, exchange rate, nah, doesn't come close to anything I'd say. I don't think I've used the word exchange rate ever. It's too economical. It's not
I'm
something
sure
I'd say.
You said something in the spirit of it, right? No, actually my favorite one right here.
I'll give you A's, B's, and D's for this. That was an F. The first one was an A.
Oh, get out of here with that. Okay.
I'm giving them grades. You're going to make comparisons. Yeah. You got to be able to back it up.
What's the matter? You come to fight a madman and instead find a god?
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a solid one.
Do you still refuse to accept my godhood? Keep your god. In fact, now may be a good time to pray to him, for I beheld Satan as he came down from heaven.
Yeah, it's a bit longer than what I would say.
Yeah.
I'm not inclined to monologues. I like short sentences.
Yeah, I like the first part of it.
The first one, the first part is definitely me.
Yeah.
It goes on a bit. It drags.
A little bit. But
I'd give that a B. I'd give that a B plus.
But for the first part.
The first one was A.
Yeah.
The second one was an F. The third one, B plus.
Okay. What about my Sagat comparison?
No, I'm not into Muay Thai.
Okay.
I literally believe that if anyone who knows Ali.
That's just too, just because we're bald.
Yeah.
If anyone who knows Ali who listens to this podcast, we'll watch Street Fighter, right? And replace
my friends
Raul Julia with Ali.
My friends have far too much class to watch that movie.
Are you just taking shots at anyone who's ever watched Street Fighter?
I've watched Street Fighter.
You're taking shots at yourself, bro.
That was such a bad movie.
It was horrible.
It was one of the worst movies of all time. I think the only other movie that beat it was Mortal Kombat 2.
Annihilation.
Yeah, Annihilation was shit.
Annihilation.
They killed Johnny Cage right away.
I know.
It was stupid.
According to the storyline, he did die in Mortal Kombat 2. In the video game storyline. Khan kills him in the video game.
I think those are fair comparisons to Bison. I wouldn't deny most of them. Mm-hmm. The second one was a bit iffy for me. I would say, in all fairness, I have been comparing you to Baranka or the little green...
Blanca,
the little green monster.
Me or him?
Him. For probably 25 years now.
Oh, wow. Mm.
Incidentally, I have a quote that he talks about Blanca.
There we go. Go for it.
It's like, "Why do they still call me a warlord and mad? All I want to do is to create the perfect genetic soldier. Not for power, not for evil, but for good. Blanca will be the first of many. They shall march out of my laboratory and sweep away every adversary, every creed, every nation, until the very planet is in the loving grip of Pax Bisonica.
I don't do genetics. That's not. That's too Nazi for me.
Yeah. No, I mean, but
a world domination, yes, totally. Conquering everything and believing to usher in a peaceful era. Mm-mm. Yeah, totally. I think the spirit's there. Creating master race stuff, that makes me uncomfortable.
I haven't finished the quote yet.
You're not good at picking quotes, are you? You do know what a quote is, right?
And then peace will reign, and the world and all humanity shall bow to me in humble gratitude.
See that last part?
That's a good last line. That was the beginning is not so good.
That was the whole diatribe in the movie, though. Like, he went hard, and then after that, Zangief started crying.
Yeah, but see, you took it too far.
You introduced the Nazi element. Just gone wrong.
I don't believe you're going to create a genetic soldier. I believe that the people you kill, you'll raise from the dead, though. Speaking of raising the dead, we just released a new YouTube video, fellas.
What is he? He's comparing you to a necromancer, and then he gives a cheap plug for our YouTube video.
Well, I love how he says we've released a new YouTube video, fellas, as if we didn't know.
Yeah.
The audience may not know, but we know. I was there.
Yes.
I was asleep when you were recording it.
Well, I edited it.
Yeah, I think V and I recorded it, and you edited the video.
That's why
all three of us.
Yes, we all did something in this video.
I think this is one of the few videos we've all kind of contributed to.
Yes, all three of us.
Yeah, there is a really interesting video out, if I may say so myself, in which it's our series called Based on History, in which I use historical analysis to look at Game of Thrones and other series. I make two predictions. Mm-hmm. About how Game of Thrones will end based off of the themes in the story, analysis. So it's a cool one. Check it out. We'll post it up on Facebook. We'll definitely post it up on Twitter.
This was my magnum opus.
And then hopefully we'll also put it up on Reddit under the Game of Thrones stuff. Yeah. So you can all check it out.
They're going to talk hella shit about my editing. Yeah, this guy sucks.
The editing is going to be, people are going to tease.
Listen, motherfuckers, I have never taken... Like, you remember William Hung from American Idol?
Yeah.
I have not taken any classes. That's me. I have not taken any classes.
Yeah, there's a lot of YouTubers that haven't taken any classes on anything.
But shut up.
This is the era of the self-taught.
Yeah. A lot of YouTubers have no class either.
What part of me looks like I could teach myself how to do anything? Y'all should be happy that I could chew gum and walk at the same time.
You're not.
Like, I'm just saying. I mean, it's an accomplishment.
I mean, I don't have a lot of confidence in you in general. But I'm not saying, but to be, you're selling yourself a bit short.
Just a little bit.
If I'm saying that, that tells you something.
Hey, the nicest thing you've ever said to me.
You know how he talks about how bad he is, you know, when his ass is on the line, you know? What but it's mean? Like, he got no problem talking about how good he is when he can get something out of him.
Like what? What did I say? What was I good at? What have I ever been good at? I've claimed to be bad at painting today. I've also claimed to be a drunk and a bad video
editor. No, you humble bragged yourself in the painting technically because you went, oh, I didn't know what I was doing, so I drew a shark and a scuba diver and whatever.
I went rogue, motherfuckers.
And then you went, oh, hey, look, a guy came and wanted to buy the painting from me.
I said he tried to molest me first.
Oh, geez, trigger warning.
I'm just saying, he did. He touched me.
I mean, that's like, that's technically like what Woody Allen does, so.
You're in an argument on Facebook, aren't you?
What are you talking about?
Because the humble brag brought this up, because you're arguing. This is post. You have a horrible habit of needing to have the last word.
I do.
Like it's neurotic.
You can't
stop yourself. That post you put on Facebook about if you're in an airport, does it count as you visiting a state?
I didn't say visiting. I said been in the state.
But look, see, you're trying to get lawyery there.
It's very lawyery here. It's a technicality.
That's an argument. That's not you're not just thinking of that randomly, are you?
No, obviously not.
Who you're arguing with somebody?
I am.
And so you're arguing that if you've been in an airport,
counts as being in that state. I check it off.
I disagree.
Like, check it off. I've been.
Airports don't count.
Yeah, I feel like airports are like
liminal spaces.
They're like embassies where it's like you're technically on the soil of the place that you came from that it represents.
They're transitional states.
Yeah.
No, I need.
It depends on like how long you're in the area.
Jeremy, you tell me. Am I in it? Noosh, you tell me. Or two winners. I want to know.
You can't do that because they won. Of course I'll sign. No, I think. Look, I think you could say, oh, I've been to Utah's airport.
I've been in the state of
you
Utah.
You can't say I've been to Utah.
I've been in the state of Utah.
Oh, cool. Where did you see? Oh, I was in the airport.
It doesn't count.
I've actually seen it. Because here's the thing. The people in the airport aren't representations of Utah. They're representations of all the people passing through Utah.
That's not necessarily true. The people I interact with at the airport are the people that work at the airport. Well, and their representation
you buy yourself a sandwich?
That counts. Those are Utonians. Is that what the word they're called?
I'm not sure what they're called.
Utanians?
Utonians? I don't know.
Utonites? Utonasians?
I don't know. No. No. The point, however, is...
Utanistanis?
I'm almost on... Like,
it counts. Yeah.
No, because also, if you get arrested at an airport, you're arrested by federal police.
No, they're trying to do that now. So they're trying to...
No, the police at the airports...
That's if I try to bring a bomb or something. If you and I go to the airport together...
No, you're talking about who tries you, who puts you in court. Yeah, you'll be dealt with the state's district attorney.
Yeah.
But the enforcement is done by federal.
Yeah, because the FAA is there.
It's like TSA is also a federal agency. Yeah.
That's true.
Those are all federal.
But the revenue goes to the state. The state taxes you on that.
Yeah, that's true. The state does tax you on that.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, you're but you,
see, I'm
it,
just saying...
Does it really matter if not, you visit, if you've been to Utah or not?
It's not just Utah, all right? It's Minnesota, too.
So, like, you're...
I could say I've been to Chicago.
You can't...
Technically, I've been in Chicago.
Yeah.
See, I haven't left the airport.
Here's a question. Why does that technicality matter to you? Does it like increase stats?
I had a bucket list of seeing every state in the United States.
No. If you had a bucket list, that does not
being,
count.
Yeah. My bucket list is I want to step foot in at least every state of the United States.
You haven't stepped foot. You've stepped on international ground.
It's not international ground. No, it's not international waters.
It's a transitional state.
Also, technically, if you're inside the airport the whole time, you're actually stepping into a building that's not actually... You're not stepping onto the ground of the actual state.
Like,
You're suspended in the air.
I get your attempt at a technicality.
How does this work?
You would be right. Hold on. On a technical level, you would be right. But on a bucket list level? No, I disagree with that.
Also, that's the saddest fucking bucket list I've ever heard of in my life.
This is just in generalization.
Just a bunch of connected flights.
I was
a bunch of connection flights.
I was in an argument with someone. I wanted to prove my point. And I feel like I'm right.
Right? Your feelings don't matter.
It does matter. My feelings mean more in today's society than facts do.
No, they don't. Not on this podcast.
Okay,
they don't.
Question. But when I was a cigarette smoker, right, I used to leave the airport. Like if I had like a 2-hour layover, I would leave the airport, go outside and smoke a cigarette, and then come back in. Does that count?
Sort of.
That counts more.
You haven't visited.
Yeah. At the very least, you've experienced.
If you're
going
to be technical. You have to say, I put my foot down.
You've experienced the atmosphere of the actual state itself.
Rather than the air conditioning.
Uh-huh. So technically, it's a little bit more feasible. Yeah, but
is it the state's property, the airport?
You can't say I visited.
I never said that I said I visited. I said that I've been in.
It's just... But why? Why does it matter that you've been in Minnesota?
I just wanted to prove a point that you could say.
You see what I'm saying? But like, why does it matter? Like, does having... That one time that you were in Minnesota's airport matter in your list of places you've gone? I have a list of countries I've been to, a list of states I've been to, stuff like that.
It doesn't matter. It was to prove a point. This person told me that, no, you haven't been in the state if you were at the airport. Yes, I have. Technically, I have.
I get where that person's coming from. You've not experienced Minnesotan culture.
I understand her point of view. I understand their point of view as well. But in a technical aspect, I am correct. I have been.
You would win the battle and lose the war, is what you're doing.
Yeah. No, I would win the court case.
Were you having a rough day? Did you need something for your ego?
Yeah.
Would win the battle but lose the war because everyone would turn against you, be like, this guy's an asshole.
Why? It's
because you're technical. The technical people are assholes.
I hashtag
that's
lawyers.
That's true. Yeah.
Technically right, but everyone goes, you've missed the spirit of it. Fuck you.
It's the letter of the law, not the spirit of the law. There's a difference.
No, the spirit of the law does count.
Yeah, but this is the letter of the law. The letter of the law says.
This is
why you're gonna die alone.
Technically. People are the ones that you kind of everyone decides that they act like they're gonna leave the restaurant, but then they all meet up again a half hour later when he's gone. Those are the technical. Those
it
are the
was just
technically people.
A debate, that myself and someone else had had, and I wanted to be right.
Okay. Well, in I think airports and a horrible transition really bring up.
Oh, 9/11. Oh my God!
Oh
don't.
God!
Really?
It is a good one.
This is how you bring it up.
That was my. That was a good transition. I'll give myself a C+ for that one.
You're gonna give yourself a fucking prison sentence for that one.
I think it is important to talk about because it was just a couple days ago.
Yeah.
So when you're listening to this podcast, this is the week of 9/11. 9/11 happened a couple days ago.
Yesterday for us.
For us, yesterday. And I think all of us grew up, we're the 9/11 generation.
Yes.
So the new generation that's going into high school right now will not have experienced 9/11.
No.
9/11 for them is a historical event that happened in the past. This is the first generation that's in high school.
Now, class of 2018.
Learning about...
They were a 1 year old.
Yeah, they're learning about 9/11 as a historical event. Mm-hmm. They have no memory of it.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas all three of us have a memory of 9/11.
Because, I was talking about this with my coworker. I have no memory of OJ, right, and the Bronco chase.
I do.
Yeah, because you were a little bit older.
Yeah, I was a little bit older.
Like, I was like
five. I remember watching live.
I don't remember that shit.
My dad was really into OJ.
Yeah, he was a football player.
Yeah, so he's like...
So like I don't remember things like that.
Crazy.
I don't remember Reagan getting shot. I wasn't alive for it.
I don't remember Reagan getting shot. Reagan
were we alive for that? You two were alive for it.
We were too young to remember that shit.
But I wasn't alive for it.
No, but we were definitely alive for 9/11. I watched it live. I saw it happen live.
Uh-huh.
I was watching Timon and Pumbaa.
Oh, the little cartoon show?
Shamelessly admit that I was watching Timon and Pumbaa.
Good show.
As like a ninth grader.
It was our sophomore year.
You were
10th grader. As a 10th grader, I was watching Timon and Pumbaa, and we turned over to the news, and we saw that the first tower had been hit.
Oh, shit.
And we saw the second tower get hit live.
Wait, no. What time did the second tower get hit? 11 a.m.
Oh, we saw Eastern. It at class. And then Miss Croy had turned on. Miss Croy was my... high school English teacher at the time.
Okay, what time did you guys start high school here?
I think 9 something.
9 o'clock.
9 o'clock. Yeah.
Damn. So you guys start late. Live. Our starts late, which is nice, right? I had zero period though, but that was the day that we only had zero period on one day.
Uh-huh.
For Latin, we'd have zero period every single day.
You would take Latin.
Yeah, Latin for zero period, dude. Like, that was insane. 7 a.m.
Yeah.
So. We were sitting in Miss Croy's class, and all the classrooms at Lisa Nagel High School, Miss Croy was a brilliant English teacher, had these TVs that you could pull out from the wall. It was like the new fancy tech. Because back in the day, you had the roller TVs,
right? Yeah.
Pull them out, and it had like a VCR. They had an actual system, though. Like, you could press buttons. Like, there was...
There was its own little remote control.
You rich bastards.
Like, nowadays...
Ours hung up on the corner.
We have touch TV, right? Or touch screens. But back then, it was like the big deal that they had these, like... fancy remote. It wasn't a remote control. It was like a buttons you'd push on the wall, and it somehow messed with the TV, and there's like a whole system involved with it. Anyways, so she had it on live. So I watched both. We watched both the second tower
like fall
hit live. We didn't see the falling live.
You didn't see it live?
We saw the second tower get hit with the airplane. I saw the Taliban come out and
that was later in the day.
Yeah,
I remember that.
Gave a speech saying it wasn't us. We're not involved.
They said we weren't involved?
Early on, the Taliban first said they were not involved in any way, shape, or form. Oh. No, because the Taliban were like, yeah, that's not us.
Mm-hmm.
Just letting you all know. Taliban aren't a terrorist organization.
Yeah.
They're an insurgency now. They're a government back
then. Yeah,
it's true.
Yeah, this is people forget that. They never said, oh, yeah, it was us. Yeah. Why would the Taliban had no interest in that type of stuff.
Yeah.
Saw that, and then we did see the tower finally come down. So we were watching it. The only class that didn't let us watch it was my psych class.
Did you guys leave school early that day?
No.
So for me, it's a little different. You guys were here in Southern California.
We were on the West Coast.
You guys were on the West Coast and in Orange County.
Yeah.
So Orange County is not like a real like, hey, target zone. We're going to attack Orange County.
No.
I grew up in Springfield, Virginia, which is literally 12 miles south of D.C. The Pentagon is right there. We pass it. Every time we go into D.C., you just see it right there. That's something I would see weekly, right? So for me, it was scary because we didn't know what happened.
Yeah.
You know, we start school out there at 7:20 is first period, right? Or homeroom.
Jeez.
Yeah, 7:20 is homeroom. And we were seventh grade. Mind you, this is the second week of school for us, right?
Mm.
And when you're going into middle school, you're bringing in like kids from different elementary schools into each other. So as a young Afghan kid who's fucking short as hell, right? And is hairier than everyone. Like, you're already an outcast. Mm. Then 9/11 happens. Mm. And at first, we had no idea what was going on, right? Like, it was kind of a joke to us. No one knew what happened. We're like, oh, there was a bombing in New York. Mm. Oh, who did it? I think it was Canada. They're mad about the South Park movie, mm. right? Like, little dumb things like that. And then I remember we were going into lunch at 11 o'clock. And at lunch, we had, like, the attendant guy. His name is Mr. D. He was our security guy. Mm. And Mr. D would call people, like, was calling people on the mic at lunch. And he was like, all right. Wesley Walker, you need to come go to the office. You know, Tyler Birch, you need to go to the office. They're just calling people's names and I was like, what's going on? Like, why are all these kids leaving? Like, I had never seen like 50 kids get called out of lunch to go home, mm. right? And then we went into our next class and they're like, hey kids, we're gonna leave the school in half an hour. There was a terrorist attack. The Pentagon got hit. Because this was like around 12 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And I think the Pentagon had just gotten hit maybe like an hour before, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So we left and we were all on the bus and none of us knew what was going on. We're all freaking out. Mm-hmm. But we get back home and like my mom's home and my grandma's there and my grandpa's there. And we're watching CNN and I'm just watching this. Mm-hmm. And like, to me, my instant reaction was to freak out because my uncles work in Manhattan mm-hmm. at the time. They had a carpet business in Manhattan. Mm. So I'm scared for my family that's there. I'm like, what's going to happen to them? They're not that far from the World Trade Center. Luckily, they made it home safe. Like, we found out a few hours later when my mom finally got like a hold of them. Like, but it was a scary situation. We didn't go to school the rest of the week. Mm. So 9/11 happened on a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, we were off.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I don't think it affected us in that way.
No, it's literally on the other coast, right? Yeah. So it doesn't quite, I mean, I woke up, I had a clock radio, right? Yeah. So like, and then you wake up and normally hear music, but waking up to just news the whole time, right? Mm. And nothing really going on in terms of music, but it was, you know, it didn't really strike me the severity of it, because it was just, you know, you hear it on the radio and it's on the other side of the state, or the country, and it doesn't quite hit you until you kind of turn on the TV and see the visual of it all, right? And mm. I watched it in class just like you did, and it was, I don't remember which teacher it was, but she was like, I have family that live in New York. So she was anxious and she's like, we're not doing anything today. We're just going to watch this, you know, just do whatever you want. Just, we're not going to be doing any stuff today. Mm. Yeah. And then you kind of see the severity of it all. And then I think it kind of, what happened when I did watch it, I kind of realized really what happened. And then afterwards, when I go home and start looking things up, right? The video, the internet at the time, videos and pictures and things that are kind of coming out. And then you really see how serious it is, right? There's that photo of the guy jumping out the window, right?
Yeah.
That thing, you know, you could see anywhere you went, that photo was just showing no matter what. And we're 15-year-old kids. It's not like, you know, we don't get exposed to those type of things when we're that young. Mm. And to see something like that was just crazy, because it almost made me go, geez, like, it almost makes you realize just, like, how intense it really is, even from far away. Like, just the idea, and then to imagine trying to be in the shoes of people who are there. And it's really scary, you know. Mm. And I still try to, and, you know, you still imagine it right now, and you just think about how crazy it would be to be in a building like that, or to even be in New York at the time, right? So it was intense.
I remember seeing it and going, yeah, this is going to be a turning point in history. The problem was, like, we didn't know what was going on. Remember, this is like the early stages of the internet. There's not a lot you can do on there. Information didn't travel as fast as it does now vis-a-vis Twitter. And so there was a period of uncertainty. Like, you knew some stuff, like, okay, we were under attack. It was the first time we visibly saw a state of kind of what war looks like on the homeland, right? So, like, one of the things about America, and also why a lot of sociologists, historians, and political scientists argue that Americans tend to be more pro-war than other countries are. They tend to be comfortable going to war. Americans are like, yeah, let's do it.
Have we been at war most of our...
Yeah, and that's mostly because we haven't had a mainland war in ages. Like, the last real war we experienced was the Civil War.
Yeah.
Most of the war happens over there.
Yeah.
So we've never quite experienced. So 9/11 was like one of those few moments where you went, oh shit, this is what it looks like, right? And then there was not a lot of information. We knew, okay, two of the towers came down, and then World Trade Center 7 came down, which wasn't hit. Then the Pentagon was hit, and then there was another airplane in Pennsylvania. Yeah. So there's a lot of, like, information was flying. And I remember, like, people talking about, like, the exposés that came out from, like, within the Bush administration about, like, there was just mass amount of panic and hysteria because there was information coming out. There could be more.
Yeah.
Like, they were on alert. And they moved, like, they moved up their nuclear arsenal. They put everything up.
Yeah, well, that's why we didn't go to school, because the fear was there going to be more.
So there was this whole sense of fear, and it took a little while until information came out.
But
and then when the information came out, what really settled is we are going to war.
But here's the thing. So you mentioned it was a turning point in history.
Yeah.
For me, 9/11, and to many other like people like you and I and other brown people and other Muslims and even other people that kind of even look Muslim, 9/11.
The first victim of the post 9/11 era was a Sikh man.
Yeah. So for me, like, and I don't know if I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but like post 9/11, the first day we went back to school, right? Yeah. We're in the gym locker or the locker room for gym, right? And I'm hearing kids talking about, yeah, they're going to put all these Muslims in concentration camps. So just like we did with the Japanese, we're going to do that to Muslims, right? And I'm a kid, and I'm scared. I'm thinking these kids know what the fuck they're talking about. You know, like
they knew about Japanese internment.
Yeah, I guess, right? They did. That's they brought up Japanese internment. We learned about it in like sixth grade.
More educated than my
apparently, yeah. My
classmates. Well, no, we learned about it in sixth grade when we learned about World War II.
That was, yeah, I'm sure didn't learn about Japanese internment.
Yeah, that's something they brought up when it was like world history. They brought that up when they brought up World War II. It was very like minor, but they brought it up, right? They said they're gonna put them in they said concentration camps, right? Because they got that word from like Nazi Germany, but you know, because they didn't know any better. But they're like, we're going to put them in concentration camps like we did the Japanese because we're going to go to war with the Muslims, right? And then they looked at me and they're like, hey, are you Muslim? And I'm like, yeah. They're like, where are you from? I'm like, I went to Garfield. They're like, no, where's your family from? And I'm like, oh, they're from Afghanistan, right? Not thinking like I just set myself up to get beat up. These kids literally were just like shoving me into like the lockers and shit, right? Like your fucking family like just attacked us. Like, you know, my dad works at the Pentagon. Like he could have died because of your fucking family. Like shoving me into the lockers. Luckily for me, there was a bigger Muslim kid that was an eighth grader who heard all this stuff and came by. Like him and like two of his friends came by and like got these kids off of me and like just punked them. Like, don't ever fucking touch them again. Like if we find out that you ever like call him this again or talk about this again, we're gonna beat your ass, right? So this kid's kind of like, you know, they backed off and I'm sitting there scared shitless. Like I had no idea what to do, and like I just met these kids the week before and now they want to beat my ass.
I think, yeah, for a lot of people, what you're talking about, I think for a lot of Muslims, minorities, brown people, 9/11 was also the experience, the first time you really felt not American.
Yeah.
Or you felt brown or different. Mm-hmm. Up until that point, you were Muslim, but you didn't really experience difference, yeah, right? But after that, you did. I remember my family, but my little sister was attacked.
Uh-huh.
Like a bunch of the school kids beat her up.
Yeah.
I remember my parents' house got egged. Mm-hmm. Their plants got stolen. My mom has plants outside.
Oh, by that crazy old lady.
Crazy,
right?
Old lady. And she's like, yeah, we're punishing the Muslims. And like, uh-huh. It was insane, right? So like, it was the first time. And we actually had to, one of the reasons, you know, that we moved was because of that.
Yeah.
Was we lived in a complex. And the complex, this was Orange County, mind you, right?
Yeah.
Orange County, the complex became so hostile from our neighbor, who was literally, we've had no real negative interactions with nothing. We just kind of said hi. They said hi. Would spit at my mom.
Uh-huh.
Just spit at her.
Yeah.
It became so hostile that we had to move for safety reasons. And so we moved from Laguna Niguel to Mission Viejo.
Yeah.
This was the experience of a lot of people that they had to, they suddenly faced a level of hostility. And I think looking back for me, when I look at 9/11, one, you had a level of disinformation that really emerged out of 9/11. You have, mm-hmm, the new era of conspiracy thinking really starts with 9/11. Conspiracy theory thinking has always happened. And there's generally certain eras, right? Certain events, I should say. The Kennedy assassination, moon landing, etc., right?
Yeah. Yeah.
9/11 was the birth of the new conspiracy thinking.
Yeah.
Suddenly, there was this idea. Jet fuel
doesn't melt steel beams.
There's a lot of valid questions to ask about 9/11.
Yeah.
Right? Like, why did World Trade Center 7
fall? Why did it call that?
Right? Like, why did that collapse? the idea that this was somehow an inside job, however, is stretching. It's insane.
Yeah.
And the reason I say this is because governments leak. Governments are not. I mean, we could just see it now, right?
Uh-huh.
Governments aren't. There's not like they don't all work together well.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of leaking that would happen. If there was, if 9/11 was the type of inside job that people claim it was, we would know it by now. There would be leaks.
You know what I will concede, though, Ali?
What?
I will concede that the government could have done more to stop it.
I think there's absolutely a case that the government can do more.
But those are two completely different.
They are completely different. Yeah. There's incompetence and then there's Now, there's a lot. Again, there's a lot of questions to be asked. How the fuck did the passport survive? Things like that, right?
Yeah.
I will also concede that the government used 9/11.
Oh, for sure.
Absolutely, to make a case for war.
Yeah.
It was not, in my opinion, an inside job. We would easily find that out. But what we saw is that 9/11 produced a level of fear and anxiety in the United States that hadn't been felt since the Cold War, the idea of imminent nuclear destruction. Suddenly, there was this idea that you could be attacked at any time. And anything could be an attack, and anyone could be an attacker. And specifically by anyone, we're talking about any brown person, any Muslim. And so what happened is, like, yeah, people always talk about how America came together after 9/11.
No, it didn't.
But the reality was that at that moment, suddenly patriotism meant war.
Yeah.
You support war efforts. We became a country that beat our chests over the smallest things. We invaded Afghanistan, one of the poorest, most impoverished countries in the world, mm-hmm. right, in order to go after terrorists as if it was a vengeance strategy, as if you could somehow bomb terrorism from out of existence, when the reality was that these people existed because of a condition of war.
Yeah.
These people were produced in conditions of war. There were our former allies in those conditions of war who had turned against us, and so suddenly we were fighting against our allies, but we didn't want to say that. We were fighting bad guys.
Yeah.
And then shortly thereafter, you had this justification to invade a completely irrelevant country, like a country that had nothing to do with anything.
Yeah.
Under the idea that there was weapons of mass destruction. And here's the thing. When we look back on that, the one of the guiltiest parties is the media.
Yeah.
The MSN, the mainstream media, failed to vet that war in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah. Well, pretty much like after Vietnam, you kind of saw that the mainstream media became a propaganda machine for the government more than anything else, right? And I think I find it to be interesting, just bringing up some more recent stuff. You know, technically, Bush didn't go to Congress about starting those wars, right? But somehow, the conservatives now are like, we need to go through Congress to do DACA.
No, he did for Iraq.
He did for Iraq, yeah.
Because
Hillary Clinton voted for the war in Iraq.
So, I mean, but there's, I mean, the whole NSA thing, the Patriot Act, all this shit, like...
There was and you're right in that regard, a massive security apparatus that 9/11 helped to build.
Yes.
And these are things that we can't deny, right? It's like, yeah, conservatives were all for government, unlimited government power.
Yeah.
Now, you know, then under the Obamas, they're all about restricting it, right? But they were totally for it. I mean, the creation of a completely separate branch of government, a department of government, Homeland Security. Right? Completely separate. Homeland Security, the creation of a massive intelligence security apparatus that would spy on its own citizens, the NSA, that was, as it was revealed by Snowden and
Assange.
Assange. And then later on, the Chasey Manning case, where we saw that our warfare, our drone warfare and bombings consistently regularly targeted civilians.
Yeah.
That it was not this kind of pristine defeating of the bad guy that we thought it was. It was killing civilians. And there was no accountability there. There was no, like, oh shit, we messed up, let's fix this. It went, oh yeah, we killed civilians.
Yeah, what happened? I mean, Abu Ghraib happened.
So, like, 9/11, what 9/11 did is it fundamentally changed the course of history in that it revealed that even so-called democratic states have these totalitarian tendencies that are inclined towards creating difference and other, that create massive apparatus that will spy on its own people, that are engaged in warfare. But what's frustrating about it is that because of the fear that 9/11 produced, the fear of everyone else, the fear of refugees, the fear of immigrants, etc., that it's become normative. We've been at war for 16 to 17 years, and we treat it as if it's normal. Every once in a while, something comes across our Twitter feed, you know, like Alan Kurdi, and we go, oh, this is really horrible, the Syrian conflict, and we start to kind of rouse out of our sleep and then do nothing. Right now, the Rohingya is kind of showing up on Twitter, but what we don't know is that Rohingya has been going on for decades, and we've just been completely ignoring
it. Yeah, Myanmar?
Yeah, in Myanmar, or formerly known as Burma. Mm-hmm. To give you some, and we just kind of, we've accepted the norm that there is mass slaughter and death and genocide going on in the world. That's just how it is. That's how the world is. But you know what? That's not how the world has to be. After all these kind of tragic events, we always go never again, right? Holocaust happened, we go never again. And then the first opportunity that we have after the Holocaust, we don't do anything about. Cambodia, Bosnia, Rwanda,
Armenia,
right? Sudan. Well, Armenia happened.
It happened before?
Before the Holocaust.
Oh, shit. Sorry.
You didn't know that?
No.
The Armenian
Holocaust. Oh, yeah, it was with the Ottoman Empire.
Yeah, the Ottoman Empire did the Armenian Holocaust. In fact, Hitler once says, who remembers the Armenians now? It was the first genocide that really convinced Hitler they could get away with it.
But no one ever talks about it until not recently.
Until more recently, but that's really thanks to the lobbying and hardcore efforts of advocates in the Armenian community. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is we were constantly going never again, but then we just let it happen. And that's the reality of Israel. We like to think of ourselves as kind of, or view our history as progressivist, mm-hmm. right? That there's a steady march towards things getting better. There's little bumps along the way, but things are getting, and we hear this. This is embedded in American exceptionalism.
Yeah.
Obama himself says it, right? The arc of history bends towards justice. It's a long arc, but it bends towards justice, he says. But that's not true.
Yeah.
We're constantly faced with these moments and crises where we don't do anything. We think, we like to admit, we go, yeah, if I was alive during the Holocaust, I would have fought the Nazis.
Bull fucking shit. Yeah.
Or like, oh, when I was alive, I would have done something about it. But the reality is that you're alive now and something is happening and you're not doing anything about it.
Yeah.
The Syrian civil war, which is really a horrible way to describe it, the Syrian conflict is completely, we've abdicated any responsibility in that. It's been going on for the better part of a decade now.
Well, it's just a fucking political chess game between us, Russia, and Iran. Yeah.
So it's, and then now you have the Rohingya crisis, which is all over the internet, and Twitter, and some journalists are picking it up, but it's been going on for decades, and we haven't done anything.
How long has it been going on for?
It's for a long time. So the Rohingya have been in this particular region for centuries. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have coins going back to the kingdom of Murak that have like Persian inscriptions on there.
Oh shit!
Right? Very clearly, for thousands of years, there have been a Muslim community here. And then there's a conquest that happens of what's known as the Burmese conquest in 1785 by the Konbwang dynasty. And the Konbwang dynasty takes over the region of Arakan.
Okay.
And from this moment, from 1785, you start to see tensions. Now, even in the early 20th century, 1900s, right, you still had Muslims participating in the parliament and stuff. The thing that really fucked it up is British colonial rule, as always. The British started to really pit these two groups against one another. And one of the things that they did is they armed the Muslim population as a buffer zone to protect their interests in India.
But they did the same thing in India with Pakistan. They did the same thing
in India, right? Yeah. So they armed these groups. The East India Trading Company extended kind of the Bengal presidency, the Bengali presidency, all the way to Arakan. And so that started the early tensions. And then in 1978, 1980 is when you have the first kind of military junta emerge, a dictatorship, a Burmese military dictatorship, in which the Rohingya people who've been living in the state of Rakhine for centuries, and there was a steady migration from Bengal and India, thanks to the British, you have them, because of this kind of fear of immigration, decide that these people who were technically indigenous, were not a national race.
Yeah, so
they're not an ethnic group, they said. They're not part of us.
So
they effectively became stateless.
Well, yeah, like I had a coworker named Riaz.
Yeah.
Riaz, his family lineage was from Burma.
Yeah.
But when like I was like, "Oh, Riaz, where are you from?" He was like, "Oh, my family is from Pakistan."
Yeah.
But then like talking to him further, cuz he didn't speak any like Urdu or anything, he was like, "Well, you know, like they actually were from Burma, but then they moved to Pakistan and then from Pakistan we came here." So he's like, "I just claim to be Pakistani."
Yeah, so like the Burmese coup d'etat that happened, General Nguyen in 1962, that's really the start. When you have this military dictatorship, they're the ones that basically decided that these people were not part of Burma. mm-hmm. or modern day Myanmar, and that they were therefore a stateless group of people. Uh-huh. They didn't exist.
Yeah.
Right. And when that happens, when a group is state, and this goes to show you the power of statehood, right? When people become stateless, they lose all rights. This is why the UN doesn't do anything. This is like citizen. When you're in that, and this is brilliantly explained by a guy named Ngamben. He talks about something called homo sacer, that is an individual that doesn't belong in the state and therefore is killable.
Mm-hmm.
And he argues that refugees, people in camps, and stateless people are the homo sacer.
Uh-huh.
And what happens is that they no longer have. There's two concepts of life: bio life,
mm-hmm.
and or what he calls biopolitical life,
mm-hmm.
bios and zoe. Zoe is zoological, that is animal life.
Okay.
All living things have animal life.
Okay.
But citizens have bios, political life. Oh. They have rights. They can responsibilities, vote. When you're stateless, you're reduced to zoe.
So just animal an life. Animal.
You're just a creature without any kind of qualified notion of life.
Yeah.
This is really fascinating to understand. For example, Japan's homeless crisis and the way they treat the homeless in Japan. Right.
They don't consider them Japanese?
They don't consider them human, practically.
Holy shit.
Right? The what's going on in Japan. Like, that's a great way of understanding. Palestinians, refugees, and the Rohingya.
See, like, the only thing I can even recall about Burma was I remember, like, maybe it was, like, 10 years ago or something.
Yeah.
I was watching CNN, and they were talking about some lady who was a prisoner.
Yeah, that's Aung San Suu Kyi.
Okay, so like I remember seeing her. I think she won like a Nobel Peace Prize or something.
Yeah, Aung San Suu Kyi was a activist for democracy against the military junta.
Okay.
And she was under house arrest for many, many, many years.
Okay.
She won the Nobel Peace Prize. She emerged as the kind of de facto political leader. The military is still a force in Myanmar. And Aung San Suu Kyi became this kind of figurehead for Myanmar. People shook her hands, Obama congratulated her, but the problem with Aung San Suu Kyi is that she has become an apologist for genocide and ethnic cleansing.
So I read that article the other day.
Yeah. So other Nobel Prize winners are calling her out. Uh-huh. Desmond Tutu is calling her out. Malala Yousafzai has called her out.
Yeah, I saw that.
And it's because what she's done is she uses the Donald Trump argument.
Which is what?
She goes, oh, there's both sides. Muslims are killing Muslims. It's not an ethnic cleansing. It's more complicated. There are terrorists in the Rakhine state that the government is trying to deal with. But the reality is that's not true, that this is an ethnic cleansing. We have journalists that have gone in and have seen whole Muslim villages completely burned to the ground.
Yeah, I've been seeing some of the videos. Kids and children,
this is an outright ethnic cleansing, driving them out. Because they're stateless, right?
Uh-huh.
You drive them out because there's a fear is that if you make them part of Myanmar, that it shifts the demographics.
Uh-huh.
So it's a demographic fear. In the same way that what do conservatives talk about illegal immigrants?
Yeah.
It'll shape the demographics of America. They'll vote liberal, right?
Mm.
They talk about that. We see the same thing in the argument against Palestinians. Against the right of return for Palestinians, Palestinians that were forced to flee. If they come back, it will demographically shift the Jewish character of Israel.
Uh-huh. Could you make the argument that we acknowledge something like white privilege existing.
Yeah.
Do you believe that there is a citizen privilege also?
Oh, yeah, totally. Well?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And there's also, like, white privilege exists within contexts, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, in a state like Afghanistan, you have Pashtun privilege.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
The ethnic privilege of a certain group, right?
Yes.
Which is the majority. They hold all the power. They have all the privileges. They have all the access and opportunities. Mm-hmm. For those that are interested in a discussion about this, TSN, the Summer War Network, will be discussing actually ethnic minorities at the end of this month, September 24th. Check them out on Facebook, Summer War Network Facebook, and you'll see the discussion on ethnic minorities in Afghanistan. In Myanmar, there's a Buddhist privilege that's going on, as well as the major ethnic groups. You have Aung San Suu Kyi who's literally excusing this stuff. On Twitter, not only on Twitter, but journalists just caught the government literally creating propaganda to excuse it. So they showed these pictures. A lot of the defenders of Aung San Suu Kyi and Myanmar have been putting up photos of like Muslims burning places and holding machetes. Well, journalists caught that they were actually not Muslims. They were people from Myanmar, there were Buddhists, who would put on like scarves to pretend to be Muslims. But then when the journalists went up to them, like, what's your name? And they'd be like, oh yeah, well, I'm actually Buddhist.
Oh wow.
And they're like, wait, then why are you doing this? Oh, the government.
So it's like those people that like draw like,
like fake news is literally existing over there, because you have a, but the thing is, they're not very good at fake news, so they keep getting caught trying to create.
So they Joey Salads did it.
They're trying to Joey Salad this stuff. And it's sad because on Twitter it's led to a misinformation campaign. So you have not, this purging of the villages that are going on has forced the Rankine Rohingya to leave and go into Bangladesh and India and Pakistan. And so Turkey and other places are trying to help provide funds, etc. But there's no resolution in sight. Donald Trump just released an a statement, and in this statement he basically replicated the Myanmar argument. Oh, there's both conflict on both sides. But that's not true. You have a very clear anti Rohingya rhetoric that has taken shape in Myanmar. There's a Buddhist monk, a very famous Buddhist monk, he's a Burmese Buddhist monk known as Wirathu. Wirathu is called by times the Buddhist Osama bin Laden.
Oh, what the fuck?
He is the ideologue who believes, he calls Muslims animals, he believes that you should...
How can you be a Buddhist? And I don't understand how...
Well, I mean, what could argue that about any religion? How you could be a Christian and violent, how you could be a Muslim and violent.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
But Buddha, I mean, all religions have violent components.
That is true,
too. People use religion to justify all sorts of things.
Yeah.
So Wirathu is a very famous Buddhist monk. And the Dalai Lama has called him out on this, right? Dalai Lama was like, yeah, he's wrong. We need to stand in support of the Rohingya people. But Wirathu is very popular in Burma. And in his speeches, not only does he call them animals, but he calls for their... for ethnic cleansing, for their killing. He's been very open about it.
But, like, how is that allowed? Like, if the guy is flat out saying it, like, if Donald Trump's, like, tomorrow says, hey, we should just kill all the Muslims, there's going to be a shit ton of backlash. Like, how is, like, this guy who's a public figure...
Well, in 2012, he held a rally that argued that they should send all the Rohingya Muslim to a third country. That's ethnic cleansing. That's drive them out of the country.
Yeah.
And then violence, like literally right afterwards, violence broke out in the Rakhine State. So he's very comfortable with the idea that this violence needs to happen. He argues that the violence is coming from the other side, right? He says that, oh, it's the Muslims, they're animals, etc., that they're burning monasteries, etc., and you need to fight back. And he's worried. He goes, there's a famous quote. He goes, you can be full of kindness and love, but you cannot sleep next to a mad dog.
Holy shit.
That's the Muslims he's talking about. And he says, if we're weak, our land will become Muslim. This is coming from the Times interview. So, like, the argument he's making is not very different from the hard right anti-immigrant people.
Yeah, I was gonna say, this sounds very similar.
It's the fear that there's a sort of demographic shift, the other. That's there. But here's the thing. Rohingya have been there for thousands of years.
Yeah.
Right? Several hundred, at least 900 years.
Islam's been in this country since the birth of this
country. Well, 900 years at the very minimum Muslims have been in Burma.
Literally, like, what, four times, five times longer than the U.S. has actually been the U.S.?
So they've been there from the beginning. But the fear is that you can create that they are other. They're not quite Burmese. They're not quite Myanmar. And therefore, they're suspect. You can't quite trust them. And if you allow them in, that they will shift the demographics. This type of fear is at the heart of all anti-immigrant ideology. And I think in the post-9/11 world, we have become more tolerant of that type of language. We've become more comfortable with that type of language. Yeah, I mean, if you guys are interested, you should definitely look up Wirathu. He's a fascinating, kind of a crazy, but it's fascinating person. In 2005, the United Nations envoy, Yang Yi Li, was sent in order to check. Because the UN has been pretty, they've documented this. So the UN doesn't have a lot of power, can't do anything, but it's symbolic. And it has said, this is one, the Rohingya are considered the most persecuted minority group in the world.
Holy shit.
Yeah, they are for a long time now.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
They are. They're considered the most persecuted group in the world. And then secondly, that this is a case of ethnic cleansing. Very openly, very clear, it is ethnic cleansing. And he hated this woman. He hated her. And he said, he invited her and he said, offer your ass to the Kalars. Kalars is like the N-word for Muslims in Burma and Myanmar. So like he's the ideologue, but the problem is like okay, so he's the Osama bin Laden. But then you have Aung San Suu Kyi, who is literally excusing it. This is a woman who is a Nobel Peace Prize winner. And rather than going, yes, this is a problem, we will address it, we're trying to get to the bottom of this, we're trying to do this, she refuses to. She says, oh, no, there's violence on both sides. This is, there's been misinformation by the media. She's literally trying to provide cover. And in that cover, the military junta has gone in and literally burned villages.
Damn, dude, she's trumping it.
Yeah, there's 300,000, I think 300,000, if I'm not mistaken, now, that are stateless in Bangladesh.
It really makes you realize, too, the fact that our information is so open now and so ready that influence can happen at the blink of an eye, right?
Yeah.
So
it's like that Wag the Dog movie.
Yeah, where we talk, where we can talk about how Kim Jong-un is seeing guys like Gaddafi getting dragged into the street and being more afraid of his the stability of his power. And him acting more rash as a result of that. To the point where you can actually see an a sitting American president doing having these tactics, right? Or like doing these things where he willingly kind of presents false news. And then they're able to kind of take that and use it for themselves because it happens to work here in the United States. Or it happens to work in other countries as well.
Well, I think genocides and ethnic cleansings happen because you get away with it. Right? There isn't a sense of accountability. And then, look, I'm not talking about, like, oh, we need to send a military intervention into Burma. But here's the thing. If the world turns a blind eye, right? If the world doesn't say anything, the U.S. as a sort of moral leader doesn't step up and say something, then of course you're going to get away with it.
But you've said this many times. Brown bodies don't matter.
No, they don't. Absolutely not. And this is... Look, Bosnian genocide happened, and we said never again. Rwandan genocide happened, and we said never again. And then this is happening, and we're just... The never again thing is a complete lie.
Your body's better to me, guys.
I appreciate you.
Yeah.
I don't.
I appreciate your body as well.
Thank you. I've been doing 10 push-ups every other Sunday.
I enjoy it.
Make things awkward here.
Was that creepy? Did that come off as creepy?
Totally creepy. Oh, well, you're going to try to buy a painting off of him?
We're broing it right now. What do you want us to do? Yeah.
So I think we should just mention as a final note about the Rohingya before we kind of wrap up. Pay attention, watch this space, tweet this information out, read the news, make an effort. Look, the reason genocide and ethnic cleansing and this stuff happens is because we're so inundated with all this stuff on social media that we refuse to look at what's going on. If you don't take the time to read an article about the Rohingya, if you don't take the time to find out about this information, that's on you.
It's true.
You can't. The information exists. You can't blame the world and go, oh, I didn't know. It's on you. And if you don't care, you go, whatever, then you need to ask yourself why you don't care.
Yeah.
You need to have a conversation there.
Well, even then.
I think I'm going to leave it there. There's nothing more I can say about it.
Outrage is a bit faux, right? I mean, if you actually ask someone now.
Yeah.
Who Alan Kurdi is. Yeah, they wouldn't actually be able to tell you.
This with my students, right? I ask them who Alan Kurdi is. They have no idea what his name is. But when I put the photo up, they go, oh, I know exactly who he is. But I go, well, what happened? Right? So it's easy to have outrage. It's about sustainable change. Look, there was all sorts of stuff in East Timor that was going to happen until Australia legitimately, like there was pressure put on Australia and Australia stepped in.
In where?
In the East Timor situation. What is Indonesia. That? Oh. There's almost going to be a genocide.
Holy shit.
So genocides are preventable. The thing is, they don't appear out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. They come roaring down like giant trains.
So the warning
signs as a person who was taught genocide at UCI, along with Professor Ian Collar, who's a brilliant historian of France, but also works on political violence like genocides, they have warning signs. They come from miles down the road. You see it. It starts with language. In Rwanda, they called the Tutsis cockroaches, right? In Myanmar, they called them dogs, right? Like you see it coming. It becomes. It starts with an ideology. It starts with ramping up hate. Then it becomes policy. You start to do things like, oh, we're going to restrict immigration. We're going to control flow. Then it starts with, okay, well, they need to leave our country because they're changing the demographics. That's ethnic cleansing, right?
Yeah.
Ethnic cleansing is not always violence. It's usually just it can be just driving people out. Still a crime against humanity. And then it leads to mass slaughter, which is genocide right now. Villages are being torched. Children are being beheaded. And women are being raped in Myanmar as we speak. it's up to us whether we're going to care about it or not. And if we don't, you got to ask yourself why you don't give two shits about a place named Myanmar.
Jeez.
This is down.
This is a rough one, Ali. This is a very rough one.
You know what? Sometimes we have to be grown-ups and deal with real conversations. Yeah, that's
true. I think I could do something to help cheer you up, though.
Go ahead.
It's about a parrot.
It's a parrot.
It's a parrot named Bud.
Omar's exotic bird?
No, he wasn't from Omar. He's from Michigan.
Ah,
damn. Omar's cousin, yeah. Habib.
Habib's exotic bird.
Habib's exotic bird.
And this is the...
Bilal's exotic bird.
Yes. This bird is a special one. He's an African gray parrot, right? And he almost got used in a murder trial.
Oh, I've heard about this.
Wait, what?
This lady just got charged, or she just got her sentence last week. Life sentence. Yes.
Life sentence?
Yeah, that's right.
She murdered. Murder was the case that they gave her.
Yes. Glenna Durham of Michigan had shot her husband, Martin. Yes. Pacow, right? Killed him.
Mm-hmm.
Murked him. And then she attempted to shoot herself, but she missed, and she stayed alive.
Mm.
Right. Now, Bud gets transferred over to Martin's sister, right? And then all of a sudden, Bud starts squawking. He starts snitching, He starts recalling the conversation that they had, and apparently he said, apparently what they thought was the last thing that Martin said was, "Don't fucking shoot."
Huh.
Yeah.
So the parrot just kept yelling, "Don't fucking shoot! Don't fucking shoot!"
The bird also is known for having a horrible potty mouth.
Yeah, that's what actually the funny thing is. So the mother, Martin's mom's all like, "Yeah, the bird picks up everything and anything, and it's got the filthiest mouth around." So it's like a foul-mouthed gray parrot who almost got used in a murder trial.
They didn't eventually do it, but they were thinking about.
They were talking about it, and they were considering
They're going to question it. So. Mr. Parrot Bud.
No, I think they were going to just replay what it was saying.
Just doing a replay of the parrot saying, Don't fucking shoot. I love it.
Either way, this bird almost became a bird of justice.
And on that note,
birds of justice.
Diz, why don't you take us out?
You guys could soar. You can find us at Facebook, facebook.com/currentlynerdy, Twitter, currentlynerdy, Instagram, currentlynerdy, Tumblr, currentlynerdy.tumblr.com. We're on the YouTube's new Game of Thrones with history. On the YouTube, just search Currently Nerdy, and you'll find that video. We're on the Stitcher Radio, the Google Play Music, and the iTunes. Leave us some ratings, some reviews, and subscribe to us, and make your family subscribe to us. And if you want to get a hold of us individually, you can. V, how can I get a hold of you?
You can find me on my website at thesandwichslayer.com. I just released a new article about a meat pie called the Hornazo, Spain's oldest university, and how it all connects with prostitutes.
Huh.
You can also find me on Twitter and Instagram at VTran214. That's VYTRAN214. Elite.
You can catch me on Instagram and Twitter at AAOLMI. Be sure to follow me there. On Instagram, you get to see the behind the scenes of what I do as a historian. Mm-hmm. And on Twitter, you get to see me rant at Donald Trump.
And your weed collection is on Instagram.
You're an idiot, you know that.
I know.
You can also find me on my website at AliAlomi.com. Or on our sister podcast, Head On History. Be sure to check that out. First complete season is there. Second season will be sure is starting up in a few weeks. Check out our episodes on the history of Islam. Diz.
You can find me clicking like on porn sites on Twitter at Dizbullah and on Instagram at Dizbullah and everywhere else at Dizbullah.
We should mention that next week we're going to be talking about some nerd news, so be sure to stay tuned.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking about Young Justice, the X-Men. There's a lot of nerd stuff that's been happening. We're going to catch you up next week. For everyone here at Currently Nerdy, thank you for tuning in. And remember, stay smart, sexy nerds.
And we love you.